I'm just happy. Power back.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Beeball. Day two of NBA free agency is in the books. If you did listen to yesterday's show, right at the very end of the show, we found out the news that LeBron James was leaving the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm going to talk more about that plus all of the rest of day two's signing. So Michael Bolton,
let's get to it.
All right. Really, really good idea. Let's start with the LeBron James news as he does, indeed join the LA Lakers. We talked about it yesterday, and there's quite a few other moves which have occurred with the Lakers, since the LeBron James announcement. But I want to talk about, you know, how it impacts things with the Lakers, but also how it does impact things with the Cleveland Cavaliers, because we haven't really spoken about that. So let's talk about how that affects the Cavs moving forward. Of course, they could have a few moves still up their sleeves. We're not exactly certain how everything's going to go in free agency at this point. But when we're looking at the Cavs, of course, that's a huge hole that's opened up there on the wing and at the four spot for Cleveland. At this point, we have to look that it's going to be filled by Chetty Osman. At this point, Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
He was signed to a minimum deal. Does he return into that spot for next season? Do we see Rocket Rodney Hood come back as a restricted free agent and play some minutes there on the wing? So there is an opening there. Does Kevin Love get moved? At this point, I'd have to think they'd go with a Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson starting front court. I would guess, it is just a guess at this point, that they would look to put Chetty Osman in a sizable role on the wing, and then you've got Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith, and perhaps Hood if he returns. Maybe they go with Nance and Love in that front court as well. And we also have to remember that George Hill still is with this team. So, you know, Colin Sexton, they drafted with that number 8 overall pick. I don't imagine that he's going to be straight away into a starting role on this team. There are still veterans around. So they've still got Love, Hill, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, Jordan Clarkson still around, even though he's not a great fantasy player, but he is going to have the option now to take more shots. Not that he really held back at all when LeBron was around, but he's still going to have an option now to have the ball in his hands more. And Sexton gets a little bit of an extra role, but Osman's really the interesting one here. For the Cavs, do they immediately slot him into a starting role? They put him into a significant role last season for a stretch when Kevin Love was injured, and I thought he played decently well. He wasn't awesome by any means. And per 36 minutes, his numbers, he averaged 12.7 points with 6.5 boards and 2.2 assists over a steal, and shot 37 from three. Now, only 57% from the free throw line is a little bit troubling. He had some, not great, advanced numbers, a PER of 11, but a true shooting of 58 is strong. And the fact that he was a plus 3.4 is also encouraging. So I'd look for Osman to maybe be a guy that you look at it as a late round pick, but it's going to so much depend on what happens with Kevin Love and with Jeff Green. And of course, with Love, if he remains in Cleveland, there's a chance that he can shoot back to being a top 20 player or even higher. Remember, he was a consistent top 10 player in Minnesota, fell out of that range in Cleveland, but he could go back to being a top 15 guy. Now, I don't think he's going to be a 26-14 sort of a player that he was in Minnesota with four and a half assists. But he averaged 1.7 assists last season, 2.2, 2.4, and 2 assists in his 4 years in Cleveland. In Minnesota, his last year, he was at 4.4 assists. I can easily see those assist numbers jumping back up to 3.5 to 4. I can see the scoring going from 17.6 that he scored last game to 20. And the rebounding was at 9.2. That could easily go to 10 or 11. He only played 28 minutes per game last season. That could jump up as well. And efficiency's never been, you know, his really big strong suit or anything like that. But he could also go to the line more. His last season in Minnesota, 8 free throw attempts per game. In Cleveland, 4 free throw attempts per game. So maybe that goes to 6, 6.5 per game. And Kevin Love could go to a player who wasn't able to crack the top 30 in his time in Cleveland, back to a player who does have a chance to be a top 20 guy and maybe a top 15 guy. So that's The real winner there, George Hill, if he can stay healthy, could take a step forward as well. I wouldn't expect much from Smith. Korver, they're not likely to be standard league guys. Perhaps Clarkson's a late round guy. And Chetty Osman, whereas, and Colin Sexton, I don't think that he's going to be playing 30 out of the gate with George Hill there. But there are some interesting things. Or do they move away from Thompson? Maybe they give Ante Zizic more minutes. Maybe it goes more to Larry Nance, who could be an interesting fantasy guy as well. As for the Lakers, they've currently got 12 guys on the books, all guaranteed deals. They have $5.6 million left in cap space. They can increase that to $15.6 million. If they do stretch Luol Deng with his remaining $36 million, they can get an extra $10 million in cap space this season. They currently said $5.6 million in cap space that they have at the moment. They have renounced Julius Randle, and just before recording, it was announced that Randle was going to the New Orleans Pelicans. We'll talk about that later. And they have made a few moves at this point. But yeah, what I'd look at, and you see this bandied about quite a bit on Twitter, that it's really bad for Lonzo Ball and his value because he needs the ball in his hands. And to me, that's bullshit. It's just not accurate. Lonzo Ball is a point guard. Lonzo Ball is a poor shooting point guard who gets assists, yes. But that doesn't mean that he's a player like Rajon Rondo, who the Lakers signed, that he needs to have the ball in his hands and he's going to be pounding the shit out of it, you know, consistently. And he's not that guy. He makes the quick pass, the first pass. He is a really strong cutter, and he showed that a lot at UCLA. Didn't do it as much last season, but he shot the ball well at UCLA. Has struggled there. He's not this great knockdown three-point shooter, but he's smart. He moves the ball, and you know, he's able to play off the ball even as a point guard and will still be able to get his assist numbers. I don't have too much of a concern about Lonzo's value. He is an excellent defender. He's the best defender on this team. So those numbers will be fine. His rebounding stuff will be fine. Maybe he loses a little bit in terms of assists. But the other players on this team who are likely going to be starting, Brandon Ingram, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, if it is JaVale McGee, or who knows what the hell they're doing at center. You know, these aren't guys who are going to be demanding or getting, racking up these assists, much like Chris Paul, James Harden in Houston, where those guys got the majority of the ball. Now, they did bring in Rajon Rondo and Lance Stevenson. I don't imagine we're going to have much Rondo and Ball sharing the court. I don't imagine that Stevenson is really even going to be a massive part of the rotation, if at all. So they don't really worry me too much with Lonzo. So maybe his assists do dip a little bit, but I think his percentages will jump significantly this season. I think he'll be fairly solid. A guy that I think loses out quite a bit is Brandon Ingram. And I believe Ingram's a player that actually needs the ball in his hands more than what Lonzo does. Ingram's a bad shooter. And the way he's been able to score is by having it and playing in that point guard, point forward sort of a role where he has to handle the ball and drive. And he's not going to get anywhere near those sort of opportunities with LeBron around. Now, he does have an opportunity in his third season to become a better shooter. Maybe that can help him. But I think that Ingram, who we thought could take a big step forward this season, I think he might lose out more than, say, Lonzo Ball does. Now, of course, there is a possibility that Lonzo gets traded. We saw that article that Lee Jenkins wrote about LeBron, and Lonzo's name wasn't mentioned in the players there. It was Ingram and Kuzma as the guys. And we know the history of LeBron in mentioning players in returning or free agency articles, much like Andrew Wiggins, that could mean the end for Lonzo. And even with the signing of Rajon Rondo, does that mean anything? Now, Rondo's not good. You know that. We know that I think that anyway. But they have bafflingly suggested that Rondo will be competing for that starting job, which is absolute nonsense in my opinion. And I don't understand really what the Lakers are doing at all here in free agency. Now, as for LeBron's fantasy stats, I think they'll be fairly, you know, fine. He went to Cleveland, played alongside Kyrie and Kevin Love. They were fine. He went to Miami. He played alongside Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. They were fine. He goes to the Lakers. He's just going to do what he did. Now, maybe he dips a little bit under what he did last season because he was carrying so much, but it's not like this Lakers team is stacked with talent. He'll be still doing what he does, handling the ball, getting his points, getting his assists, hitting the improved amount of threes. He'll just be the same sort of guy that we've seen from LeBron over the past couple of seasons, I believe. Let's talk about some of these other signings. Lance Stevenson goes to the Lakers as well. That was announced almost straight away after LeBron joined. 1 year, $4.5 million. I have no idea who else was bidding for Stevenson. The Pacers had already declined his team option, the only team where he'd really been successful. You've got Lonzo, you've got Rondo, you've got Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who returned to this team on a 1 year, $12 million deal. You've got Josh the Hitman Hart, you've got Ingram, you've got LeBron James. That's six players who are already better than Lance Stevenson. So Lance should be considered the seventh wing player. And I don't think he should be in the every night rotation. So I don't really think that there's much for us to look at in terms of Lance and his fantasy value. He still remains a shit bloke. And people will say, oh man, he was 18 years old at the time, and people can change. People can change and they can have mistakes forgiven. Sexual assault and domestic assault, like, they're not just, oh, it's a mistake you made as a kid. You just, like, I was 18 years old. I never smashed my girlfriend down the stairs and cracked her head into the concrete. I didn't do that. Is that a mistake? Yeah, it's a bad mistake. And maybe he did change, but I'm not going to be rooting for this guy than saying he's a good bloke. And in addition to that, he's not a good player. He's one of the worst defensive players in the NBA. Oh yeah, he puts out hustle because, you know, he pisses people off. Cool. Can't shoot. Bad player, bad guy, bad defender. I don't see the point of it. And I do think that it is trending towards a way that he's just not going to be a part of the rotation for this team. And I think that's a good thing. Now, many other people have, you know, posited all this sort of shit over on Twitter, and people go, oh, Josh, they're only 1 year deals. They can't be bad as 1 year deals. And they're just doing it, to preserve cap space for next season. And my answer to that is fine. But why don't you sign a better player for a 1 year deal? Mike Scott, someone who can shoot. He's a 1 year deal. So many players are getting signed for 1 year deals. You know who was a 1 year deal? Trevor Ariza. Not saying they could have necessarily brought Ariza in, but the cost of Rondo and Stevenson is basically the same as Trevor Ariza. Yeah, these are 1 year deals as well. Just because a player's on a 1 year deal doesn't mean that it's necessarily a good signing. It means it's not as bad as it could have been. It could have been really bad. But the fit of these guys, of Rondo, of Lance, even JaVale McGee alongside LeBron, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make this team good. It doesn't make them, you know, challenges to the Warriors or the Rockets. Are they even better than the Thunder, the Wolves, the Pelicans? Who knows at this point? And they had to renounce Julius Randle's rights as well. There's just a real confusing bunch of moves from this Lakers team to surround LeBron. And people say, oh, maybe they're just, you know, really going easy on the cap space till 2019 so they can bring in Kawhi. And that's all fine. But LeBron's 33 years old. Why are you wasting a year of what he can do when there are other players out there that you could have looked to bring in on one-year deals who are better options than these players? JJ Redick just signed for $12 million for a one-year deal in Philadelphia. Tyreke Evans apparently is looking at a one-year deal in Indiana. There are one-year deals going around all over the place. Avery Bradley still hasn't signed with anyone. That's a one-year deal that you'd much prefer over Lance and Rajon Rondo. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, do they bring back Brook Lopez? Rudy Gay signed a one-year deal, and he's better than both of those players. It's not like you couldn't have found the space for these other guys who did sign one-year deals who are going to be better options than these players that they brought in. There are so many other guys that you could have looked at. You know, Mario Hezonja signed a one-year deal. He's better than Lance Stevenson. I'd prefer having him than, say, Rajon Rondo on this team. There's some real confusing moves with the Lakers in free agency. Now, we'll talk. Rondo came in for $9 million. The Pelicans apparently did want him back. $9 million seems like a significant overpay to me for Rondo. And again, they are saying, multiple reports are saying that he's going to have a chance to compete for Lonzo Ball for the starting point guard spot. Him and LeBron in the starting lineup together would just not be ideal. Rondo ended last season as the 94th ranked player, 8-4-8 with a steal on 47-54. Yeah, he shot 33% on his threes. Still not a good three-point shooter because it just doesn't take enough and people don't really value him. He's not going to be. Now, he is the guy that playing alongside LeBron. He's just not going to have the ball in his hands. And it doesn't worry me too much with Lonzo, but it worries me with Rondo. And I think Rondo is going to be significantly overdrafted in fantasy leagues next season. Because people say, oh, he played great in the playoffs. And he was good against the Blazers. I'm not denying that. It's terrible against the Warriors. And people do think, oh, there was four games against the Pelicans where he was good. And there was five games against the Warriors where he was shit. And the majority of the regular season, he wasn't good either. So I don't think, and if the Lakers are going to start Rondo over Ball, that's nonsense to me. And I don't really see him as being any sort of great fit next to LeBron, and I don't think he's going to be a high priority fantasy target for really anyone moving forward. The other guy that the Lakers brought in was, of course, JaVale McGee, and with the way their roster currently looks, JaVale could be the starting center. Now, that doesn't mean that JaVale is going to be a player who plays 29 minutes per game. He, you know, was a limited guy in Golden State, 9.5 minutes last season, but still got a block per game, which translated out to 3.3 blocks per 36. His first season in Golden State, 3.3 blocks per 36. If he goes from 9 minutes a game, which he played in Golden State, to 20 minutes, then there's value there as a guy who could easily block 2 shots per game in 20 minutes. Maybe he gets you 5 boards. Maybe he gets you 8 points. And yeah, perhaps that has value on a very high field goal percentage. And weirdly, he shot 73% from the line last season after being only 50% in each of the last 2 seasons. That is a 23 percentage point increase. Seems unrealistic to continue, but if he can be a true shooting 64 guy, which he was last year on 62 and 73 from the field and the line with 2 blocks, maybe there's something there. Now, of course, Ivica Zubats is still around for the Lakers. They could bring back Brook Lopez. Maybe DeMarcus Cousins heads over there. You know, really, who knows what they're going to do in that center spot. But JaVale is, I think that's a totally fine signing, and it's much better than the Lance Stevenson deal and much better than the Rajon Rondo deal for this Los Angeles Lakers team. They also brought back KCP, as I mentioned, on a 12 million dollar contract. It's not great things for Josh the Hitman Hart's fantasy value, even though I think Hart could potentially be better than KCP, but I do like what KCP does. He's not going to be an overall great fantasy player, but remember, all of his fantasy value, it never comes from being a guy who handles the ball a ton. He doesn't get assists, he doesn't get rebounds. It's from his ability to score, and that will be reduced a little bit this season. But it's more about him hitting threes and getting steals. He was over 2 threes per game last year with 1.4 steals on decent enough efficiency. And there's no reason why he can't have a similar season to last year where he averaged 13, 5, and 2. Maybe he's at 12, 5, and 1.5. The steals and threes still there. And the decent free throw percentage, actually, which dipped a little bit last season, had been pretty good prior to that. So he's going to be a low upside, late round sort of a player, I believe, with this LA Lakers team as he heads back there. Now, Rajon Rondo has moved on from the New Orleans Pelicans, Lord Alfred Payton has gone there. Now, he was a disaster in Phoenix outside of his maybe first game there where he played pretty well, but he was out of the rotation. Well, not out of the rotation. He was very limited towards the end of the season, and they renounced his restricted free agency rights. Overall, he was the 81st ranked player in 29 minutes, the majority of that value coming when he was with the Magic, averaging almost 13 points, 4 boards and 6 assists with 1.3 steals and 49% from the field. We know he can't shoot from 3, but really a decent enough field goal percentage. The free throws are still a concern. I imagine that the Pelicans will still, I think they could start him and play him in a 20-minute, 22-minute role there in that Rondo role with Drew Holiday playing off the ball, because they just don't have much else in terms of shooting guards or threes. Maybe Frank Jackson can step up in his first season and steal some of those minutes off Payton. So we have to see how it all plays out for the Pelicans, but Payton could be a late round guy, but he's more probably going to be a 14 to 16 team league point guard. But there's a legitimate chance, and a pretty strong chance, I think, that he enters the season as the starting point guard for the Pelicans. I just don't think it's going to be a 30 minute per night role. It's going to be him. It's going to be Ian Clark, and Drew Holiday manning that spot with Frank Jackson probably getting in. And that's going to limit him to mid 20s in minutes would be my guess. At probably even a maximum. Some other guys that went back to their own teams we'll quickly mention now. Aaron Gordon for 4 years, $84 million. Obviously, that puts a cramp in what John Isaac's going to be able to do. Maybe they want to start Isaac at the three, but they still have John Simmons and Terry Ross there at the three. And then, you know, the potential to put Isaac at center is limited by having Mo Bamba, Nick Vucevic, and, or of course, Bismack Biyombo still around. So it does put a cramp in what Isaac's going to be able to do for this coming season. I still really believe in John Isaac. And if his owner in a dynasty league is as soured on his prospects because of this Gordon move, I'd try and acquire him for cheap. I don't think that Gordon necessarily plays out this entire contract in Orlando. And I could see Isaac getting better than Gordon within a year or two as well. So I still think it's a great opportunity to buy low on John Isaac, but his value for this upcoming season, he's probably going to be capped out at I'd say maximum 25 minutes. You know, playing some backup three, playing some backup four, as Vooch, Bamba, Gordon, Isaac, they're probably your main four guys in that front court. So maybe he can get to 25 minutes. Derek Jones Jr. went back to the Heat on a 2-year deal at the minimum. He's not very good and he's not going to be really a part of their rotation, so very little to see there. Derek Favors, a 2-year, $36 million deal. I think Favors, that's a great deal for him. He's a really strong player. He's only 26. Other teams should have been pretty aggressive in trying to get him, but obviously he wanted to go back to the Jazz, and he'll be a guy that probably honestly doesn't finish inside the top 100 next season. For him to be a top 100 player, he needs to be playing the bulk of his minutes at center. And if he's going to be starting alongside Rudy Gobert, then the bulk of his minutes won't come at center. It wasn't the greatest season for him. He was the 102nd ranked player in 28 minutes. And I think that's a reasonable expectation for where he finishes or around that zone for next season. A lowish upside player who would be a real chance as a top 70 guy had he gone somewhere else. But he hasn't gone somewhere else, so we don't have that ability. And JJ Redick goes back to the Sixers on a 1-year, $12 million deal. I think he'll be very similar to last season. There is a chance that he does lose some minutes. He was playing quite a bit for Philadelphia, especially if Markel Fultz comes along and they run a little bit more Fultz and Simmons, or even a little bit more Timothy John McConnell, as we saw in the playoffs as well. So perhaps Redick, at his advanced age, doesn't play those minutes that he was playing last season, and maybe he goes back to more of a role that we saw him playing on the Clippers, where he was a guy getting under 30 minutes per game. And that wasn't the case in Philadelphia last season, where he was over 30 minutes per game, and he played 28 each of the last two seasons for the Clippers. So he could potentially see a couple of minutes drop off there, but really an elite three-point guy, an elite free-throw shooting guy as well, providing value in both of those categories as he returns back to the Philadelphia 76ers. Let's talk about Mario Hezonja. I think one of the bigger winners in free agency in terms of fantasy value. He heads to the New York Knicks on a 1-year, $6.5 million contract. The Knicks, at this point, I would, at this stage, pencil Hezonja in as being a starting power forward option. We know that they don't like Courtney Lee and Timothy Hardaway as the small forwards on this team. So I think you're going to have, well, there's Trey Burke and Frankie Ntilikina in your backcourt. They'll be battling for that point guard spot. There's Timmy Hardaway and Courtney Lee playing at the two. There's Manuel Mudiay in there mixed in as well, of course. At the three, you're going to have Lance Thomas. You're going to have Kevin Knox, who I do think has a chance to be the starter opening night. I don't think he's going to be a great fantasy guy. I think he might score 12, 13 points around that mark on poor field goal percentage, but limited in all of the other stats, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. He'll be pretty limited there, making him maybe a guy you take with the last pick, but I'm not super high on Kevin Knox. And then at power forward, Kristaps Porzingis is returning from an ACL injury. Kyle O'Quinn is an unrestricted free agent. Is he returning? Enes Kanter's back on this team. They don't have really another power forward on this team. So is it going to be, do they bring Michael Beasley back? He started when Porzingis was out, but he's not a good player. And Hezonja actually did some solid things last season when Aaron Gordon was out. In fact, over the last 40 games of the year, he was a top 80 fantasy guy in only 26 minutes, averaging 12, 4, and 2, 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals, 0.6 blocks, on 43, 83, and 34. There's a real chance he plays 30 minutes a night for the Knicks, and that could make him, a top 65 guy. There's an element of risk there, but I get the feeling that you're going to be able to get Hezonja at a decently cheap spot in ADP value, and I think he can start, and I think he can really be a top 70 guy for this coming season, because he's better than Beasley, and I think he'll be a starting power forward for this team. Maybe it's Lance Thomas, I don't know, but I'm really, really interested. I think he's probably one of the biggest winners in terms of free agency so far in this 2018 free agency class. Really, really big winner, I believe, is Mario Hezonja. And a strong pickup from the Knicks. I wanted him to go to a team where he'd have an opportunity, and this is definitely an opportunity for Big It's-a-Me. Let's now look at Nerlens Noel, who went across to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Not a big deal for Noel. 2 years, $4.8 million. With a player option in that second season. Clearly, he is the backup. Steven Adams is starting. Adams played big minutes, so we're going to see very limited playing time for Nerlens. He averaged 16 minutes per game last season for the Mavericks. I think there's a significant chance that that's the sort of amount that he's at this year, and that can make him a top 200 guy, but it doesn't make him a top 100 guy. Give him 25 minutes per night and he's a top 100, top 80 guy with his steal ability, with his block ability. And even last season, in those 16 minutes for Dallas, he averaged over a steal and 0.8 blocks on 52 and 75. Strong percentages, great steal numbers, and 6 rebounds in that time. And over the course of the season, per 36 minutes, he was the 25th best fantasy player, averaging 10 and 13 with 2.5 steals and 1.7 blocks. And he will still likely be that guy. He's always been a great per 36 guy, but the opportunity here, save for a Steven Adams injury, just isn't there. So I don't think we're going to see much out of Nerlens. It's probably one of the worst situations he could have gone to unless he was going back to Philly, which never would have happened, in terms of or Minnesota, in terms of his fantasy value. We know the potential's still there. It's just not going to be realized in Oklahoma City. Referenced this guy a little bit earlier on. Mike Scott from the Washington Wizards went to the LA Clippers on a one-year deal. We assume it's going to be a veterans minimum deal. We've got Tobias Harris and the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, manning the three and the four spot. We know that Gallinari is consistently injured and always has issues there. Wes Johnson, another guy in those positions there. But I think that Scott can come in and be an 18-minute a night sort of a guy. He played some center with the Wizards last season in the playoffs. We know they've got Marchand Gortat and perhaps the table Montrezl Harrell and Boban there as well. But he should be able to slot in and be a solid enough backup center or backup power forward who's not going to really change the fantasy landscape all that much. Had one of his best seasons last year, 53% from the field, coming off a 29% shooting year the year before in Atlanta. But he just doesn't do too much else aside from that. So it's a strong rotational piece, and I think it's a strong move from the Clippers to get a guy like Mike Scott, exactly the sort of guy I think the Lakers should have gone after at that minimum deal. But it's not going to have too much of a fantasy impact as we move forward. Next guy we'll talk about is a former Cleveland Cavalier, and that is Jose Calderon. He goes to Detroit. He'll be there mixing it up with Ish Smith to be the backup behind Reggie Jackson. Calderon had some moments last season, especially in terms of just being able to stabilize a team and run an offense. I have my concerns with Ish Smith. Calderon's not going to be taking the job off Reggie Jackson. He might be a third string point guard a lot of the time, but of course, Dwayne Casey and Jose Calderon do have a level of history in Toronto as well. So I do think that he's got that chance to take over from Ish, but he's just going to be an assist stream guy in deeper leagues. But it's a strong enough deal for Detroit. I think Detroit fans should be okay with getting a guy like Calderon, especially when you're considering Dwight Bikes was their third string point guard last season. And Calderon, even at his advanced age with his poor defense, he is an upgrade in that spot and could also be an upgrade over someone like Ish Smith. One that, again, slipped under the radar a little bit, Thomas Bryant, who was waived by the Lakers last season. He was claimed off waivers by the Washington Wizards. Now, that's important because the Wizards obviously traded away Marchand Gortat, and their current center rotation is Yan Mahinmi and Jason Smith, with a little bit of Markieff Morris in there. Now, Bryant was a guy who last season absolutely killed it at the G League. Like he killed the G League. He put up, and I'm going to bring up his G League numbers here and have a look, but he put up some absolutely monster performances. 19.7 points with 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.6 steals, 1.5 blocks. He hit almost 2 threes a game, shot 60% from the field, 36% from 3, put up, you know, really strong offensive numbers, PER of almost 24, big win shares, good defensive box score plus minus. He was a monster in the G League. Now, I believe he was on their first team All G League as well. Yep, he was on that team. So he was really, really strong. And with the Wizards having a lack of young prospects, especially big guys, he's a name to watch for them next season. Does he move ahead of Jason Smith? I could easily see him being more useful than Jason Smith at times during the season, but he's just one to watch for your dynasty type formats and for deeper leagues. But it's a really interesting spot to see Bryant move across to the Wizards with their lack of big man there. It could really work out quite positively for him. Anthony Tolliver has gone to the Minnesota Timberwolves from Detroit. He was key for Detroit. Now that opens up some real rotation minutes at that power forward spot. Do they play Stan Johnson at the four more? Does this mean that we're finally going to see Henry Allenson in the mix at power forward? Given what they've got around, and it might have to be because I don't really see who else they've got to slide in there behind Blake Griffin at the power forward spot. Tolliver goes to Minnesota and provides some floor spacing. And I actually really like the move for the Timberwolves. I shit on Tom Thibodeau quite a bit in terms of his personnel decisions, but 1 year, $6 million for Anthony Tolliver as a stretch big man. It doesn't mean great things for someone like Gorgui Dieng, obviously. But it is he is interesting. He can block shots. He can hit threes. And if Taj gets injured and we see Tolliver into a large enough role, he could be a valuable short-term fantasy contributor. But of course, behind Towns, behind Gibson, and with Dieng in the mix, that's going to be their four big men, even though they used only three big men last season. It's going to be interesting to see how they actually run that rotation out in Minnesota. And will Dieng be completely out of the rotation? I wouldn't completely, I wouldn't count that out. Even though I still do believe in Gorgui Dieng, Tom doesn't seem to have that same faith in Gorgui, and I could very, very easily see him falling out of the rotation there so that Tolliver can move in. So it's an interesting one. Back to the Detroit side of things, though. In terms of other big men, they do have the tackle box, John Lua, who missed all of last season. He's their fourth highest paid player, John Lua, which is horrible because he's not very good. They've also got the little dog, Glenn Robinson, who they signed yesterday, and he can play maybe a little bit of four, a little bit of stretch four. So he's another option there if they don't feel like they can rely on Allinson to take that role. So maybe it is Lua who moves in there, although Lua's best role probably is as a center, not as a power forward. So they've got some front court concerns behind Drummond and Griffin. If one of those guys gets injured, they are in a significant amount of trouble. The last guy we're going to talk about, unless some weird news breaks on the podcast like I did yesterday, is Julius Randle. He had his qualifying offer renounced by the Lakers, making him an unrestricted free agent. And then a couple of hours later, he signed a two-year, $18 million deal with the New Orleans Pelicans. Does this mean that DeMarcus Cousins is gone? Not necessarily, or not really at all. It looks like it's probably going to be some sort of weird sign and trade deal between Randle and Rondo to get from the Lakers to the Pelicans for those guys. I'm not really sure how that's going to work, though, considering the Lakers did renounce his cap hold, so I'm not sure how they're going to be able to sign him to that deal, but that's the way that it's going to be looking. Now, Randle was solid last season, really good, 87th ranked player in only 27 minutes per game. But so much of his value is going to depend on what Cousins does. But to start the season, Cousins isn't likely to be there, regardless of if he re-signs. So I can see an Anthony Davis, Julius Randle starting front court with Nikola Mirotic being that bench guy. And that is a very, very good three-man, big-man rotation. You add Boogie into that mix later on, and that would enable them to be able to ease Boogie in. He would only have to play 24, 25 minutes, and they could go easy on his Achilles. I think that's great. It does put a limit, I do believe, on Randle's upside here, especially if Cousins returns. But I could see him playing more than the 27 minutes per night that he played last season. This means that Emeka Okafor's out of contention. We know what Randle can do scoring-wise and rebound, but will he be able to maintain a 25% usage rate in New Orleans with Drew and with Davis there? I guess, and of course with Cousins, that's somewhat of a concern. So maybe his scoring dips, but in LA, with Lonzo around, he did see his assist rate drop from 3.6 per game down to 2.6. With the Pelicans having really only Drew Holiday as an accomplished passer, assuming that Cousins is out at this point, then Randle could see those assist numbers jump back up. He could get 4.2, 4.3 assists. Now, steals and blocks, he's never going to get. He's just not that sort of a defender. He can be a strong rebounder. I think that he has real chance to be a top 100, maybe top 70 sort of player, but so much is going to be influenced by DeMarcus Cousins, especially when we head towards fantasy playoffs, because I don't believe Cousins will be there to start the season and Randle will be able to get bigger minutes. But then at the end, when you've got Randle, Cousins, Davis, Mirotic, is someone has to lose out there. Is it Mirotic? Is it Randle? What are they going to do? There are a few concerns, I guess, with how that plays out, but I love the deal from the Pelicans' point of view. It gives them great insurance for Cousins missing chunks of this season, and he was quite impressive last season. But there is still a risk that usage does drop, but I think that can be offset by his increase in assist rate. So that'll be interesting to see how that all pans out. Now let's have a look to see. Let's have a look to see how if any other moves have gone down. As I did this yesterday, of course, the LeBron James news came out. Let's have a look. The only Woj tweet I've seen here is that Anthony Davis's tenacious recruiting helped close the deal on Randle. So that's there. Where else have we got any other moves happening here at the moment? Nothing else that I can see has gone down. So everything else we will talk about is going to happen tomorrow. We'll also have a little bit of Summer League stuff in tomorrow's podcast. as well as the Sacramento and Utah Summer Leagues kick off today. And Jaren Jackson has started off very, very nicely. You know, I'm big on Jaren Jackson, so he had a great start to that game. But we'll talk about that more in detail tomorrow. If you did like this podcast, guys, a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts would be absolutely fantastic to help the show. You can also subscribe on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and on YouTube. Smash the thumbs up, hit subscribe, leave a comment below as well, and follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Nick Young.